Hello again, and welcome to Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Have you ever heard of the term non-duality? Well, today our guest, author Jerry Katz, will try to enlighten you and I on this fascinating subject. Jerry Katz was born in New Jersey and lived for many years in Santa Monica. He graduated with a Master of Science degree in biology and conducted research on relationships between the pineal gland and melatonin. Recently, Mr. Katz has been researching and teaching the fundamentals of an idea called non-duality, a subject which has both philosophical and spiritual overtones. Mr. Katz runs a nonduality.com and the Non-Duality Salon, which is an email forum. His book is 1, The Essential Writings on Non-Duality. I'm happy to introduce Jerry Katz to Authors Audio. How you doing, Jerry?
I'm doing great, Jake. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the introduction.
Well, you're quite welcome. Jerry, we're going to get right to the discussion of non-duality, which is our main topic. But first, I'm wondering if you could give our listeners a brief summary of your career, Jerry, and how you got into this very unusual topic.
That could take up a lot of our interview. Let's see. My first experience with consciousness or awareness started probably around the age of 3. My family was visiting Washington, D.C., and I remember I was sitting on a ledge, maybe it was 6 or 8 inches high, and there was a small waterfall, maybe 1 or 2 feet high, and on one side of it there was a red floodlight cast, and on the other side it was a blue floodlight cast, and in the middle was no light. So you had the red, white, and blue. It was Washington, D.C. And all I remember is waking up to it, seeing it. And in that instant, I just knew that I was aware, and I knew I was having an experience, and I could feel the experience being emblazoned into like my nervous system. I could actually experience the experience happening, and all I was nothing. I myself was just space for that matter, but I could feel this experience happening, and I knew I would remember it for the rest of my life. And even though I was barely 3, somehow all those words, not the words, but somehow all that knowledge went through me. That was my first appreciation of awareness or consciousness. And then another experience happened around the age of 7. I was sitting on, I can remember distinctly, sitting on the hardwood floor of my house, playing with little toy cars, and suddenly, in a way that was similar to the Washington, D.C. experience, I suddenly woke up with and uttered, just spontaneously uttered, I am, and I am, I am. And that was, to me, it was like an initiation into my being as I am, just pure I am.
Well, you know, that sounds like the what is it that God, isn't God say that I am that I am?
That's right, yeah. You can find that in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. Even it's in the, it's in Exodus. Also, Jesus said, before Abraham was, I am.
Exactly.
Indicating that he is eternal. So this was just a natural experience that I had. And I think everyone has these experiences, to tell you the truth. It's just a matter of whether you value them. So that was a second kind of an initiation into pure being or awareness. A third experience happened between the ages of probably around 10 and 12 when I had visitations by 2 men who would come into my room and I could see them. In later years, I did recognize them as well-known sages and gurus from India. But they would come into my room and simply, and I'd be scared because they were, you know, imposing. And one of them would utter a mantra, and he would utter it 3 times, and it just went right through my body and shook me. And this happened 3 times, and I simply, in later years, would simply recognize this as a further initiation of the I am presence. Another experience happened, I think, a couple of times around the age of 12 or 13, where I had out-of-the-body experiences and simply hovering above my body, seeing my body breathe, and being aware that what I was awareness, because I was in a space. When I say I mean, who is I? Just awareness in a space of stars, and I could simply focus on one star, and immediately when I would focus on a star, that would immediately remind me of, I saw that star as no different than the mantra uttered when those guys came in, also no different than the I am, I am, and I am, I am initiation. So all this came together.
Okay, well, I kind of understand the I am that I am that I am, I suppose, but I think what you're really saying is that we are, as human beings, awareness, that all of us are awareness first. Is that what you're saying, Jerry?
That's what I knew as my fundamental self. I knew it was very important. I just knew it was important to have that knowledge. I don't know if I had the awareness that everyone was like that. I didn't have the pure or the full non-dual knowledge of it. But I had the experience.
Well, I also want to just go for a moment over, because you're also a biology major.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And for a time, I noticed in reading about you that you were studying the relationship between melatonin and the pineal gland,
yes.
Which is very interesting, because other people have talked about the pineal gland as being something very important that we are only beginning to understand its prescience in the body. Can you explain how this research ties in with your previous spiritual ideas? Is this something that just happened, or is it sort of tie in somewhere?
You know, it does tie in, but I consider it an experience that isn't as critical or as essential to an understanding of awareness. But I'll tell you what happened. It's interesting. It's really interesting. I was 13 years old. I was in the eighth grade. And the teacher, I really was never that great a student, but I often would be daydreaming. So here I was daydreaming, and the teacher's pointing to a chart of the human brain, teaching us the different structures of the brain. And I was kind of gazing out the window, and then all I remember is her saying, pointing with one of those big long wooden pointers they had back in the 50s. She pointed to the pineal gland, and she said, "This is the pineal gland. It doesn't do anything. Now here's the cerebellum," and suddenly, in an instant, I was jarred out of my daydream, and I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "That can't be. The pineal gland does something." And I just knew that, and I had no reason to know it, because I just knew I knew it. So that was, let's see, I was 13 years old, so that would have been, 1962 or so? So in 1971, I was at the University of New Mexico. I was in a boarding house taking a room for a place to live, going to university. And a guy walks in with a backpack, and sticking out of the backpack is a book on the pineal gland. And suddenly all this stuff from the eighth grade came back. And so this guy named Shelton, I said, "You know, what do you know about the pineal gland? Tell me about it." So he started to inform me of it, and we ended up doing some research on the pineal gland. And we actually started a research program at the University of New Mexico, the two of us, in the early middle 70s. And I left the university, I think, in 75. But the research initiative carried on. And some years later, a guy named Rick Strassman came to the University of New Mexico because of the pineal gland research. And he ended up doing some very well-known studies on a substance called DMT, and he wrote a book called the spirit molecule or the spirit gland, but it's about the spiritual aspect of the pineal gland. So there's the connection. There I was in the eighth grade with a sudden insight into the pineal gland, started a research project at the University of New Mexico, which led to Rick Strassman coming in and doing his work. And you wonder if some of these things are connected. It's an interesting connection, and that's kind of an experience I had with the pineal gland, but to me, it's just something that happens. That type of an experience happens. It's a coincidence, or whatever you want to call it. More valuable to me are the experiences with the I am and the awareness and consciousness and so forth.
To get back to your book for a moment, the book is The Essential Writings of Non-Duality 1, edited by Jerry Katz, and your book is a compilation of many religions and sages, what many religious people and sages say about the concept of non-duality.
Yes.
Is this a religious subject or a philosophical subject?
Well, I mean, I don't really take either definition, to tell you the truth. It could be religious, and it is philosophical. It could be philosophical. But for the main part, it's personal. I mean, it's who you are. It's who a person is right here, right now. It's you. When I say you, I don't mean you. I mean, you know, the general you. It's whoever is listening. It's that more fundamentally, more fundamentally than it is religion or philosophy.
Well, in duality is about judgment and limitations and measuring and talking about it and all that stuff, which is important to, on a certain level, to differentiate between one thing and another. That's a big positive about duality. I think most people agree.
Okay, yeah.
Non-duality, however, is something I think most people are going to sitting here listening to this are going to say, now, where is this guy in this word non-duality? It's a place, we could say, and I'm just going to paraphrase, it's a place where the dual nature of life seems to really be as one nature. Is that right?
You can say that. You can say that when you're one with your duality, then you understand non-duality. But we could look just at a definition of the word. And non-duality means, well, duality means two or two-ness, of course, and non-duality literally means not two. It also means non-separateness. And the definition refers to the sense that a person is not separate from something that's greater than themselves, from reality. And this reality can be sensed. This greater reality, this reality greater than our everyday world, can be sensed. It's known as something just deeper and more meaningful and more complete than our everyday reality. So if we're talking about duality and non-duality, we just need to step back, I think, and look at what non-duality is and how we can experience it.
Well, we're talking about a paradox, which is between existing and non-existing.
You can't have one without the other, and from some point of view, there's neither existence nor non-existence. From a radical point of view, there's only awareness, and everything arises out of awareness. And all this, the Hindu tradition has the word Maya for everything that arises. One way to go beyond Maya is to go to its source. And Maya even provides the tools to do that, the various spiritual practices and so on.
Well, yes, Maya is really the illusionary world, isn't it?
Yes, it's existence. It's all of it. There's nothing that's not Maya. Even non-duality is Maya, but it's the way that Maya allows you to get out of it. Maya provides the means to understand Maya. We can actually do that. I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves or not. I one way I really like to, if I can back up a little and talk a little bit about the structure of the journey to non-duality, and maybe we can catch up with some of the things that we've talked about and bring it into this little structure. I see three phases of the journey to non-duality. And the first one is the perception of something greater or more meaningful, more complete, deeper than our everyday reality. We perceive this something else, this greater reality. And the second phase of the journey to non-duality is valuing that perception. We desire to know more about that something more meaningful. And the third phase then is the pursuit non-separate reality. And almost anything we talk about can be placed into those three phases. When I talked about my experiences in my life, came under the perception phase. I was perceiving something other, something greater, that I called the I am. Later in my life, in my 20s, I started to value it, to understand it, and desire to know more about it. And that led to a pursuit, to spiritual practices. So a lot of what we talk about, and a lot of philosophers talk about, come under the perception phase. They perceive something greater, and they want to get to know it. And there's a lot of talk that goes on about it. and it's, in a sense, it is valued. And I would suggest that it's a good thing to value this and desire it to the point where it's pursued, where it's really pursued through spiritual practices, so that a person fully knows, fully understands what's perceived, fully understands this non-separate reality, this non-duality. And so my work goes not just doesn't just hang around in the phase of perception, but I like to discuss valuing that perception and then pursuing it until there's no one left to continue the pursuit, until the pursuit is over.
Well, that's I'm sure a lot of people are going to think about that comment, because that's a pretty big comment. Buddhism and Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, and a lot of other isms all talk about a union with the divine as a way to move out of suffering, to move into the nirvana experience where you have overcome suffering. And is that place where you overcome suffering, is that the non-dual world? Is that what you would call the non-dual world?
You overcome suffering. You can overcome suffering in regards to non-duality if you perceive a sense of freedom beyond suffering. In fact, we only can say we're suffering. We only can know our pain. We only can know our contraction in life. We can only understand we can only sense imprisonment, psychic imprisonment, if there is the possibility of freedom. You can only know you're in prison if you have some intuition or some sense that there's a condition of freedom, right?
It seems the human condition is essentially that. We are conditioned to think of freedom as a non-static thing. However, most of us are like missiles which can't seem to make escape velocity. And we fall back to this dual world of pain and suffering and so on.
We do. I mean, this is the human condition. It's called suffering. But some people do get a glimpse of something greater. They do get a glimpse. They sense that because they are imprisoned, that there has to be a space of freedom. And that freedom they can call truth. And they can call it non-dual reality. They don't have to give it a name at all. All they have to know is that it's there. So when people sense this place of freedom, this something greater, this something more meaningful, this non-dual reality, some people will actually value it. They'll value it. It'll become important to them to an extent that they desire it. They desire that freedom. They desire that non-duality. What follows the desire, and the desire is actually fuel for it, is the pursuit. You say, hey, I want to get out of this prison. I want to understand this freedom. And so you do something. And that's the pursuit of non-duality. First is the perception, then the valuing of it and the desire of it, and then the pursuit. So the way out of suffering is to pursue non-duality.
Yeah, sir. Jesus says, unless you become as a child, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Is non-duality, in the way we're talking about it, is that the kingdom of heaven?
That's the kingdom of heaven.
A lot of people are going to say, oh, okay, that's the kingdom of heaven. No.
When I said the perception of something greater to something, a perception of something more meaningful, deeper, vaster, call it the kingdom of heaven. It doesn't matter what you call it. You just have to know it. And it can be a wordless knowing. But that's a good way to put it. People know it. There's people listening who know
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yes.
You sense it. You intuit it. You feel it. You even at times experience it. People have experiences of non-dual reality. I can remember my mother going on periodically throughout her life. Every couple of years she'd mention she had an experience. I guess she was in her late 20s and walking through a park, and suddenly, the way I remember her describing it, suddenly everything became peaceful. An entire peace surrounded her and descended upon her. And she walked in this peace, and it lasted a while, lasted a number of minutes. And periodically throughout life, she would tell me about it, just sometimes for no reason. She'd say, did I ever tell you about the time? Yeah, Ma, I remember. So there's an example of that first phase of the journey to non-duality, the perceiving of something greater, whatever you want to call it, the kingdom of God or whatever. She valued it. She valued it. But I don't think my mother ever really desired it to the point of pursuing it. Most people don't.
These ideas remind me of many people that I've read over the years, Gurdjieff and St. Paul and some of Hermann Hesse's books, guys like Joseph Campbell, the great teacher of mythological stories. And he says that, you know, words are only capable of directing us to a place of transcendence. Words cannot take you to transcendence. And this is, I think, that jumping off point that we're talking about, where, you know, there's a certain leap of faith there at the end of the road where you move into something unknown to you, really.
That's exactly right. It is the unknown. It's the, some people call it the formless. There's a chapter in my book by Jerry Wenstrom, who is an artist, and he talks about how he destroyed all his art and just gave himself to formless existence. And it's beyond words. The whole non-dual reality we're talking about, we can't describe, we can only point to through words. But you can do things like a guy like Jerry Wenstrom did. You can surrender to that. You can surrender to that sense of mystery, that something greater, that sense of the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, and it's something that you do. You don't plan to do it. It's something that you really don't even do. It's done to you. It's done to you. You're taken in by it. This whole perception in this first phase of the journey to non-duality that we're talking about, this whole perception is a perception of something beyond you, something greater, something other.
Do you have a personal practice that you use to become in tune with this and to sort of move you along a little bit?
Well, I don't really have a practice. I did practices at the time in my middle, late 20s when I was really pursuing this sense of I am. And for 2 or 3 years, I did nothing except 24 hours a day, as much as I could, paid attention to I am, my sense of I am, my knowing of it. And I did that I just did that all the time. And I worked stressful jobs and I still did that. It was a great, great teaching for me, a great lesson. I always paid attention to I am, my knowing of it. And then I can tell you it was 1977. I just seemed to become stabilized in it. It was just like over. It was just, I was there. And I remember uttering or think a thought came to me. There was only one day. And that was in 1977. And that just stayed that way for years. I lived life as though there was one day. Even though I got up and went to bed, it didn't matter. There was only I am. There was only this essential reality, this non-dual, non-separate reality. But then around the age of, in my 40s, even the I am just kind of dissolved, disappeared. So this brings it right back to the 1952 in Washington, D.C., when I had the experience of the colored water. The question could be asked, well, you know, who had that experience? I don't know who had that experience. All I know is that the experience happened. But who had the experience, I don't know. It was just awareness. So here I am now in my 40s, and this whole I am knowledge falls away, and I'm just back to where I was in 1952, just awareness. And this is how a person lives, you know. I mean, that's all we are anyway, is awareness.
Well, Jerry, I think that we possibly could agree that these ideas we're talking about tonight are pretty eclectic. Most people are just living in the simple dualistic world where this is that and that's that, and you know, they're doing their income taxes, they're driving to work, and I don't know how much they really take time to really maybe embrace what you're talking about, but do you think humanity in general is ready to embrace the understanding that you and others are looking for here or finding?
Well, people already live this way, but they just have to realize it. This is why I speak of three phases, and a lot of people, millions of people, can identify with the first phase of the journey to non-duality. It's the perception, the sense, the feeling, the intuition that there's something greater than their everyday reality of paying taxes and, you know, going to bed and going to work. Millions of people know that. And if that's all I teach to the general public, if that's all I talk about, that's enough. People know that. And then all I go a step further and I say, value it. You know, value it. Make it important in your life, that sense you have of something other. Don't forget it. Don't, you know, like my mother, don't talk about it every couple of years. Value it. Value it now and value it constantly. The valuing is fuel for the pursuit. So once you value it and you say it's important, then you start pursuing it. And the pursuit comes in any number of ways. Any number of ways. Any number of practices. You can read a book, go on the internet, go to nonduality.com, whatever. Just start the pursuit. The pursuit takes you. I have no advice about the pursuit. So, yeah, millions of people can understand what I'm saying about the perception of some greater reality. Just take it from there, value it, and then see where it goes.
Well, Jerry, I guess we could talk all night about this very ambiguous and difficult subject to explain. I'm wondering if you could read a little bit from your book for our audience, and maybe that will help everybody understand Jerry Katz's concepts in his book, One, Non-Duality. And I'm sure that you can go to his site at nonduality.com and attend some of his forums also. Jerry?
Yeah, it's an email forum that we've had since 1998. It's very active. It's still active. And people are invited to join Non-Duality Salon and talk about non-duality, even beginners. You know, no one's going to, people will be treated with respect. And there are links on non-duality. I've set up non-duality.net, and people can find out about that. Yeah, or non-duality.com, either one. And they can find out how to join Non-Duality Salon. What should I read from my book? Let's see. We talked about pursuing non-duality, so I'm going to read some stuff. It's a little advanced, but people, I have confidence in the masses and in humanity that they can, people will grasp this on some level. So I'm going to read a chapter from Ramana Maharshi, one of the perhaps the greatest sage of the last 100 years. And there are three ways, really, to pursue, according to Ramana Maharshi, three ways to pursue non-duality, three practices. And I'll read a short paragraph that will depict each one of these. There are three ways. One is the direct knowledge. Direct knowledge is when the sage speaks, and just speaking and speaking the truth, you hear it and you get it. You get it. The second way is through a practice called self-inquiry. And I'll read a short paragraph that teaches you how to do self-inquiry. And the third way is through surrender to God or to the formless reality. I talked about that earlier with regard to Jerry Wenstrom. So here's a paragraph that has to do with direct knowledge. If you can understand this, you could awaken. You could awaken to non-dual realities. So I'll just read this. Here's Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi speaking. He says, there is no reaching the self. Self is non-duality. If self were to be reached, it would mean that the self is not here and now, but that it is yet to be obtained. What is got afresh will also be lost, so it will be impermanent. What is not permanent is not worth striving for. So I say the self is not reached. You are the self. You are already that. The person can hear that, get it, and wake up. Elsewhere, he speaks of self-inquiry. And here's a self-inquiry means that you ask yourself, who I am. You inquire, who am I? You know, who am I? And it says, this is how you do practice self-inquiry. When thoughts arise, one should not pursue them, but should inquire, to whom do they arise? It does not matter how many thoughts arise. As each thought arises, one should inquire with diligence, to whom has this thought arisen? The answer that would emerge would be, to me. Thereupon, if one inquires, who am I? the mind will go back to its source, and the thought that arose will become quiescent. With repeated practice in this manner, the mind will develop the skill to stay in its source. Its source is the self that I read about earlier. And that's another way. And then the third is, find this in my book here, it regards surrender. Yeah, surrender is, there are a couple of, he says, there are two ways, basically. Self-inquiry and surrender, as far as active things that people can do. He says there are two ways. In the reading again. One is looking into the source of I and merging into that source. And I already read about that. That was self-inquiry. And the other is feeling I am helpless by myself. God alone is all-powerful, and except by throwing myself completely on him, there is no other means of safety for me. Thus gradually developing the conviction that God alone exists and the ego does not count. So I mentioned three methods. I mentioned just listening about the truth of the self. I described self-inquiry, asking who I am. And then there's this third way. It's the feeling that I am helpless by myself, but God alone is powerful, and you surrender to God. Yeah, so those are some readings from Ramana Maharshi. And those, when a person pursues their perception of non-dual reality, when you pursue your perception of this something greater, this something more meaningful, you will probably find yourself practicing one of those methods.
Well, ladies and gentlemen and listeners, we have been listening to Jerry Katz, the editor of a book called The Essential Writings on Non-Duality, and I hope it was some kind of insight for you. It certainly was for me on a very mysterious topic, and I know a lot of people are questioning, what is it still? How can I understand it? Well, maybe one of the ways is by picking up Jerry's book, The Essential Writings on Non-Duality, or you can go to Jerry's website at nonduality.com and visit the forums and the information he has there, and I hope that'll be helpful. And that brings us to another end of an author's audio program. This is Jake D. Steele, your host, saying keep dreaming and happy readings.